You know, he walked into my shop here about 5 or 6 years ago, right out of the blue, asking for a job. So I put him to the test, see what he could do. Kid's amazing. Yeah. So I hire him on the spot. Boom. At about half the wages I normally pay. He didn't blink an eye. Hey, kid, come over here for a second, will you? And I have been exploiting him ever since.
Hi, and welcome to the Ending Podcast. This is Andrew.
This is... Shit. This is Douglas. Wait, hold on. Is this... Yes. And is that...
This is Damien. It's been so long, guys.
I think we're back.
So very long. I know a lot of you heard rumors about us being murdered because the podcast is horrendous. That is all false. All right? We took a sabbatical, let's say.
We all had no peace. Yeah.
You were out peace. I did none of that.
And personally, I got lonely, so I did a lot of... I made up a lot of random bonus episodes, which were really fun.
When you said I got really lonely, that is not where I thought you were headed.
Yeah. I definitely had a different picture in my mind.
Yeah, but that's because I'm a terrible person.
I'm very afraid to ask you of that picture, but I feel like it just might not suit listeners to find out.
I think we should get right in it, since listeners probably won't don't remember how we sound or what it is that we do on this podcast.
And especially because this podcast is a bit of a special podcast, it's not really going to help them.
Yeah.
Because we're not doing what we usually do. Sorry, guys.
Then maybe it will be good.
In case any of you guys didn't know, a whole month ago, it stopped being 2011. And we have yet to tell people what our favorite films of the year are.
Because we, like the Academy, take our time and weigh the options. We don't just wait until a new year starts and then start spouting off. No, we give it time to sink, really sink in. Right? That's what we did, guys?
Yeah, okay. That's exactly what we did.
Especially Douglas, he's been doing that for a while.
Yeah, I have been.
So basically, tonight we'll be doing our top 10 episode of the year. Enjoy it or not, agree with us or not, that's really not our problem. Just email and let us know.
Andrew looks so aggressive. Enjoy it or not. Like us or not.
I think
these are our listeners, Andrew. You can't talk to them like that. Apologize.
I apologize, listeners. Now let's get on with the show.
Okay.
Damien, I want you to kick us off with your number 10.
Okay, my number 10 of the year is Super 8, which is surprising to me because I really, really love this movie. And I found that I liked 10 other movies ahead of it.
10 other movies? Don't you mean 9?
Yes. No, I mean 10.
Okay. I mean, my mind is a bit shabby.
I'm letting you know ahead of time that cheating will be taking place.
No, but Andrew, don't you understand? I'm pretty sure the last top 10 I was a part of, I had
90.
Yeah, but Douglas, I expect you to choose 30 movies. Damien, on the other hand, I expect him to follow the rules.
I only chose one extra. Nothing else. Super 8 has to be on my list because Super 8 was terrific. I know you guys were a little down on it. I don't know why that is. I enjoyed every single second of this movie. It was fantastic.
Production value! Gary, you put film in the camera, right?
I didn't put it in.
What?
Put it in!
Joe, get the mic ready. Go! Go!
Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go! Go!
Shut up! I'm trying!
Get that set up!
Positions! Positions!
Ready. Start filming. Be extra loud when the train passes by. Here we go. And action!
And it has elevated J.J. Abrams from somebody I just kind of like to somebody that I watch anything he puts out. Really love this movie and everybody should watch it.
So does that mean that you've been watching Alcatraz?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely not. Why would I do that? Is that a feature-length movie?
No.
This Alcatraz? No, it's a TV show. You know what other TV show you did?
What show was that?
L and ends with garbage.
And now that we've gotten our obligatory last eight out of the way, my number 10 of 2011 is a film that I was looking forward to for a while, but isn't a movie anyone would really talk about much, and it's Project Nim, a documentary by James Marsh, the guy who did Man on Wire a couple years ago. This last year we got Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which I know Damien wasn't a big fan of. Douglas, I can't recall how he felt about it, but I really enjoyed Rise of the Planet.
Right. Yeah.
I really enjoyed Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Project Nim does almost the exact same thing that Rise of the Planet of the Apes does, just around 20 times better, which surprised me to no end. I've become a bit of a documentary fan over the years, and this movie, it delivers as a follow-up to Man on Wire, as far as I'm concerned.
I thought that movie was going to be a Dear Zachary and end up top on your list. I mean, I'll be over it forever, but 10 scenes about, right?
Okay, so it sounds like it's my turn. And my number 10, actually, the truth is it doesn't deserve to be in my top 10. However, I cannot, with any sort of goodwill or in any sort of good conscience, leave out any movie made by the creator of Moon. Therefore, Source Code is my number 10.
Thank you, sir.
Is this the director's cut or is it Source Code?
Actually, if it was the director's cut, this movie would rank much higher. But this is actual theatrical.
What would you do if you knew you had less than 8 minutes to live?
I don't know. I'd make those seconds count.
I would call my dad. I would hear his voice, and I'd tell him I was sorry. Tell me everything's gonna be okay.
Everything's gonna be okay.
I don't think I've seen the theatrical cut. you
did make a good point a while ago.
I don't think I have.
Yes.
I wonder if Duncan Jones knows about this director's cut.
I was going careless. I see him and somebody else. Since Douglas just mentioned Source Code, you'll see here on my list, Douglas, that I have Source Code at my number 9, the director's cut. And since Douglas has taken that already, it doesn't really seem right for me to say it again. So I'll replace Source Code with another movie that I enjoyed thoroughly that we reviewed on the podcast, Minx Cut Off. We spoke about this movie. I wasn't in love with it the first time I watched it because I couldn't.
You
see
saw
much.
Greens.
But subsequent viewings, and it was viewings, I've seen this movie about 4 times now, and every time it just gets better and better. The situation that they're in is just more ridiculous, and it feels more real and more dirty. It's just fantastic directing, terrific acting. It's what you wish more movies were. They just have a concept that they st- start out with, and the follow through is so well executed that you can do nothing but enjoy the movie. And so for that, I'm putting me at my number 9.
That is a great film. And for some reason, I don't know why, I haven't gone back to it since we recorded the podcast. I really should. I wonder how much is the Blu-ray now? Is it?
I got it for $13.
I'm sure I'll be ordering that by the end of the night. Anyways, my number 9, which I'm sure Damon is going to want to stab me. I hope he stabs Douglas since I'm not there in my stead for taking this from him. But it is one of the best movies of the year, and damn it, I can't think of a funnier movie. And it's The Guard by John Michael McDonough. Actually brother to Michael McDonough, the guy who did In Bruges a couple years ago. And it feels really right to have those two movies so closely related to each other. Because honestly, I feel somehow like Brendan Gleeson just needs to be that person all the while.
What?
You've taken something.
I have not.
You've taken something. You didn't even act surprised, for fuck's sake.
This is like the Birmingham Six all over again.
Hand it over, you little shit. Don't make me frisk you.
You're tripping, if you think you're going to frisk me, I'll have you up on charges.
Do you want me to batter the hell out of you, Eugene? Because I will, boy. No questions asked. What in hell are you doing? It's tiny.
It's a derringer. John Wilkes Booth used one to assassinate Abraham Lincoln.
I wouldn't think it'd do that much damage.
They get the job done, so I'm told. Although I can't see what use they'd be to their app.
Maybe they're for killing little Protestants.
It is astoundingly hilarious watching it. And I feel almost cheated somewhat in the movie when, towards the end, and there's actually a line in the film where Don Cheadle looks at Brendan Gleeson and says, "You're either really dumb or really smart." And they try to harp on that line as to say, he wasn't that bad a person, you know, but I feel like they shouldn't need to say that out loud at times, but otherwise the movie is pitch perfect. I kind of see it as the drug movie to comment on all drug movies by having those moments in between that we never see. Mark Strong is just brilliant in it. And I'm going to stop talking about it now because that's it.
Mark Strong is brilliant in a lot of things, to be fair.
Just curiosity, does Mark Strong ever play a good guy?
I started watching Tinker Tailor and he looks like a good guy in that one.
I won't spoil that movie for you.
Cool.
You should watch the rest of that movie, sir.
I haven't watched that one yet.
Really good. Guys, it's really good.
It looks fantastic.
Guys, it's really good.
okay, so it looks like it's time for my number 9. And I think my number 9, I feel, the truth is, I feel like I'm doing a bit of a disservice to my top 10. because I haven't really watched that many non-big movies.
Non-big.
Right? I haven't watched that many movies that that would usually be sort of the Douglas picks for the top 10.
Right, there's not a lot of Frenchies in.
Yeah. So my number 9... while still probably, I don't know how many people would agree with me, but I am going to say that Hannah is my number 9 movie for this year. It was a really, I thought it was one of the best action movies that I've seen in a long time. It was just fantastic. Some of the sequences and the fact that it was this 12-year-old, well, she's not really 12, but you know, yeah, this young girl doing all of these crazy things and running all over the place. It was, you know, Born Identity with ponytails. It was fantastic. And that is my number 9.
So Damien, that's one amazing soundtrack.
Yes, the soundtrack is really good. It's not Tron Evolution good, but it is really good. So moving on, my number 8, Gore Verbinski. killed it this year with Rango. it is so good. So good. There's just not enough words to describe how good a movie that is. A lot of other animated movies came out this year, Kung Fu Panda, Cars, and stuff like that. But nothing was anywhere close to the caliber of Rango. It was fun and smart.
All right, now listen. I'm going to give you fellas one last chance to reconsider. And if you don't want to reconsider, I might consider reconsidering myself. Huh? Now that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
And witty, and what's his name? Johnny Depp did not know me. They also had our friend from Justified, Mr. O, which was playing Clint Eastwood, I guess. It was, I mean.
Speaking of which, just letting everybody know that Justified is my number one movie of 2011.
It was Justified.
Douglas, actually, Justified is no. It's 2012.
I know. I've seen the first three episodes or the first two, and it's fantastic so far.
Justified wouldn't be my number. Game of Thrones would have been the number one for 2011.
If it were
put
TV.
Yeah, if we could put movies as TV.
If we could put
movies. I watched TVs like a movie. I watched them all back to back. I don't stop. I eat popcorn. I show that people make noise. It's like watching a movie. I don't say different. Alright, so Rango, it's fantastic. It is so good. It is beautiful. It was Industrial Light and Magic that did it, right? I think so. It looks way better than anything they did in Rise of the Planets. Weka got their ass kicked by Rango, in my opinion. I love this, and I'll be watching this over and over for a long time. It's one of the few movies that are up there with the best Pixar movies. It's so good, and everybody should watch this movie.
My number 8 film is what you guys would probably look and say, ah, it's Andrew, he had to pick this film. It's Steven Soderbergh's Contagion.
I find that shocking.
It's one of the most solidly structured ensemble thriller films, which gives me such a realistic opinion as to what would really happen if the world just came to crumbles because a new disease came out that could affect the world like this.
Andrew, you think a bat would kill 1/5 of the world's population? Is that what you're trying to tell me? That is the realism that Soderbergh has brought into this?
Yes.
I didn't plan to argue with you in any of your movies, but this one, I mean, it's not a bad movie. It's not like Girlfriend Experience, which is trash. But it was merely a good movie, Andrew. I don't see what is so special. I honestly don't. It's one of the few movies you'll probably talk about that I'll take up any sort of issue with. But I don't. I really don't.
I mean,
what is your number 8, so...
The thing about Contagion,
Soderbergh bias. I think that's what that is. I put in a star beside that one.
You put in a star, Soderbergh.
And in the legend, I'm going to put star Soderbergh.
So when we come to the top 10 of 2012 next year, and I mention Magic Mike and Hey Why, you'll just have stars.
No, if those are good, then no. Although I doubt Hey Why is going to be very good.
I still haven't seen it.
That girl can't act. Can't act, son. He tried it already with Sasha Grey, and that, look how that turned out. You should put actors in movies. That's why
there are
there.
There are many cases of non-professional actors pulling out performances because it was written well for them, and I will refer us back to Fish.
That is true. No, that is absolutely true. It is clear that Soderbergh is not that director. Track record is terrible. Anyway,
Contagion is awesome. Don't listen to Damien. Get rid of that star.
I have terrible movies on mine, so it's only a matter of time.
Okay, well, my next movie, number 8, is actually, again, another very big movie. It's a remake, and it's directed by one of my favorite directors around, David Fincher. It's called The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, something like that. Yeah.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's, you know, a little movie nobody really knows. That I actually really enjoyed this movie, and I'm going to sound like a snob here, but unlike a lot of people, I actually have also watched the original.
Snob.
And no, but the funny thing is, I have no problem with saying in public that I believe this movie is 10 times better than the original.
I will agree with that statement. It is better. David Fincher is a better director than whoever the first guy was. He's able to tell a better story. He's able to structure the movie much better than the original. So I agree 100% that it is a better film.
You're going to what?
I'm going to soak up some snob points and let you know that the director of the Swedish film was Niklas Oplev, I believe.
Okay. Oh, that's all you're going to say. There's no opinion.
No opinion.
You realize this is going out on the internet. And so there's databases where movie information is stored. You don't need to
actually, my question would also be, I would really love to see what Andrew's doing right now. Mm-hmm. I'd love just a picture of him and the computer screen he's in front of, just to make sure that, you know, there is no Wikipedia or IMDb that he's pulling from, you know, this information from. But I
believe it came straight off the dome. Right, Andrew?
Straight off the dome.
Okay.
But no, this movie, I thought it was really, really good. As I said, the structure was great. I thought that Kate Mara's performance in the movie was... maybe it's just because I came into the movie with some low expectations for her, but I thought she definitely did extremely well with her part.
Just note, Douglas, that was Rooney Mara, not Kate Mara.
Sorry. I know that it's her sister, but for some reason, I guess Kate's a bigger one. I just remembered her. But yeah, so Rooney Mara, I think she was pretty fantastic in that role. And overall, pretty decent casting. And the only thing, of course, that was a little bit weird was that, I guess, in line with the James Bond itis started by Sean Connery originally, if you've noticed, no matter what nationality Sean Connery is in any of his movies, he has a Scottish accent.
Magically Scottish.
The same seems to apply to the new James Bond.
To be fair though, no one in the new Girl with the Dragon Tattoo attempted any kind of accent.
They did hire some Swedish actors, so.
Yeah, I think everybody kind of tried to have some sort of lilt towards that region.
And look, it's not cowboys and aliens. I didn't have a problem with that. I kind of assume that, you know, once a movie is made for America, that these things are bound to happen. Do I wish it would be better? Maybe. But if they're going to do that, then they'd probably have everybody speak it native. And then there'd be subtitles, and then it wouldn't come out in the States. So, you know, we have to take what we can get. But I love that movie, too. It's really good. It's not top 10 good. It's really good. Speaking of top 10 good, my number 7, Andrew took the guard away from me. And he put it way up in the rafters at 9 or some such madness. So I'll replace that with X-Men First Class.
Ah, oh, you fucker.
And while I understand
that
the blue makeup was pretty terrible, that's pretty much the only gripe that anyone can have with this movie. The bacon gives his... I'm sorry,
the bacon.
Forehead. Jorge gives a terrific performance. Oh my god. In fact, this movie is fun. This is what all summer blockbusters should be. It should be high action, but it should also be smart and tell some semblance of a story. Not just beat you over the head with action scenes strung together by shitty dialogue. They should attempt. And this is the best summer movie that came out, and it is my number 7, and everyone has seen this movie at this point, and if you haven't, shame on you.
I honestly hope that somehow they can get Fassbender and McAvoy to come back for the sequels, because I don't think they've signed to the sequels.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure they'll get them back. I'm pretty sure. If they're going to do bigger and better for the sequel, then they're going to spend a boatload of money and they're going to advertise it more. And anyone that saw this first one, they already have those people in the seats already. So I think the second one will be a success. I'm pretty sure of that. Even if it's a terrible movie, which I don't.
Alright, well, my number 7, and I think this is like the beginning section of my list where I noticed a trend in films of 2011, and it's something I've mentioned a few times before, is that looking at the movies of 2011, it felt like this constant need to go back to a different kind of film making, a different kind of storytelling, where people are no longer being cynical in the movie. We no longer have that snazzy protagonist who's just being sarcastic every 2 seconds. And I'm not saying those movies didn't happen in 2011. I'm just saying that the films that I consider to be some of the best movies of the year just all seem to be very forthright and honest with itself. And my number 7 movie is Cameron Crowe's We Bought a Zoo. It's a film that I had no idea I would love as much as I did. Some people are going to go into it and walk out and just think that it's cute family schmaltz. But honestly, it is some of the best family drama that you'll see, where you get to watch this individual, Matt Damon, have to struggle with the idea, the tragedy of having lost his wife, and you see this thing of him going out and literally buying a zoo with no forward planning, and it's almost like watching a train wreck of a life decision. But it turns out to be one of the most interesting things and smile-inducing films of the year. And I enjoyed it. I don't expect you guys to enjoy it. I expect to hear lots of arguments. But I enjoyed the movie thoroughly.
Well, I can't really hit you on that one, seeing as I haven't watched it yet. Oh, Damien is shaking his head.
Have you actually seen it, Damien, by the way?
Yes, I have. I'm not going
this
to.
This is the next movie, by the way.
Yes, thank you. I agree.
I haven't seen it yet.
No, I have to watch that movie.
Yeah, my god.
Too.
Anyway, so it sounds like it's my turn, and unfortunately, Damien has taken my number 4 pick. Therefore, I now have to do a little bit of shuffling, and I think what I'm going to put in at number 7 is a pretty decent movie. Actually, not just a pretty decent movie, I really enjoyed. You guys know me, right? Even though I always say, boy, I don't watch movies with any heart in it. There's just certain movies that are just so heartwarming and kind of, it's just by the end of the movie, you're smiling and saying to yourself, that was so sweet. They just manipulate you. One of those movies, two of those movies really, are the Before Sunset / Before Sunrise trilogy, hopefully. There's a third one on its way, apparently, so I'm calling it a trilogy right now. But the one that came out this year that I really did enjoy was Midnight in Paris, which is, I think, one of Woody Allen's very few good movies in recent years.
The assignment was to take the hill. There were four of us, five if you count Vicente, but he had lost his hand when a grenade went off and couldn't fight as he could when I first met him. And he was young and brave, and the hill was soggy from days of rain, and it sloped down toward a road, and there were many German soldiers on the road. And the idea was to aim for the first group, and if our aim was true, we could delay them.
Were you scared?
Of what?
Getting killed.
You'll never write well if you fear dying. Do you?
Yeah, I do. I'd say it's probably, might be my greatest fear, actually.
Well, it's something all men before you have done, all men will do.
I know.
Have you ever made love to a truly great woman?
Actually, my fiance is pretty sexy.
And when you make love to her, you feel true and beautiful passion, and you, for at least that moment, lose your fear of death.
No, that doesn't happen.
I believe that love that is true and real creates a respite from death. All cowardice comes from not loving or not loving well, which is the same thing. And when the man who is brave and true looks death squarely in the face, like some rhino hunters I know, or Belmonte, who's truly brave, it is because they love with sufficient passion to push death out of their minds until it returns, as it does to all men. And then you must make really good love again. Think about it.
And as I say, if by the end of this movie you're not smiling and saying, you know, oh, that's such a nice story, you know, something's wrong with you. You have a heart made of stone.
There's so many good things about that movie that I want to talk about, but I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it.
All right, look, the dragon was a little bit much at the end of that movie. I don't think they needed to put a dragon in that movie.
Yeah. Oh, right. That was, I mean, really and truly, you get to one stage and
the whole Optimus Prime sub-story. All right,
so Damien.
My number six is very simple. Cary Fukunaga gave us a great movie the first time out and then destroyed it, absolutely crushed it the second time out. Jane Eyre is spectacular. Everybody needs.
Wait, sorry. I'm sorry to hijack the podcast.
Oh my God.
But I've been doing a little bit of research just to see if there's any last minute shuffling that I should do in my top 10 list. And Andrew, I'm going to send you a link, right? So you can actually see what I am seeing, right? But I have just found a movie by the name of Hawaiian Vacation. Now, if you ever hear a name like that, you might think, oh, National Lampoon, Chevy Chase. You know, okay, all right, fair enough. But I noticed that.
Is that the Toy Story? That's the Toy Story short film that was played in front of. Which movie was it? It was Cars.
Damn it, Andrew! You know, you took away. I was building it up. I was gonna say a lot of more ridiculous things.
Yep. But all of this will be cut.
But anyway,
now that you think about it, I don't think I've actually watched it because I didn't go to the theater to watch Cars.
I didn't even know this.
I didn't know it existed. I saw it and I was like, "What the hell is this?"
No way.
I knew about it because everyone was talking about. Yes, we get more Toy Story. And stuff like that. And I got to see another Toy Story short that they made this year in front of... what movie was it? It was Beauty and the Beast 3D. They played a different Toy Story short in front of that one. And it was kind of awesome where they had Tiny Buzz.
Tiny Buzz? Yeah.
Yes, but we've just hijacked Damien's pick for the
talking
reason.
About shitty movies. Alright. Jane Eyre's spectacular. I know they've made about 100 of these movies at this point. Everyone has seen Jane Eyre. But this one is so well executed that you can do nothing but like this movie. Douglas doesn't like heart. This movie has it in droves. They poured the heart all over this movie and they put two stellar actors in there to ensure that your eyeballs will be engaged for the entire 2 hours. This movie is great, and I shake my head to think that I have it at number 6. It should be higher. I don't know why I didn't put it higher, but this movie is great. Jane Eyre is terrific, and I have all the respect in the world now for Fukunaga, but he is going to put himself in the Chris Nolan position, where at some point there is going to be a terrible movie, and I fear how bad these movies are going to have to be, because karma must work, right? You can't just make awesome movies. Everybody knows that. But if you make only awesome movies, the fall off has to be so hard. And I'm worried. I'm actually worried. Right? That every time I see a new movie by these guys, in the back of my mind, I go, this might be the one. And I don't like that feeling. They need to put out something bad so that I don't have to worry about that for a couple of years. But Jane Eyre is spectacular. I love this movie so, so much. And Fassbender is in there. I don't know if
you almost said Fassbottom, didn't you?
Yeah, almost.
I think there's a trend here. There's a trend here with Damien's picks.
Yeah.
Oh,
Fassbender is in like 9 of these movies. Huh?
My number 6 film is a movie from a director who's taken us to high school. He's taken us to retirement. And he's also taken us to wine country. Now he's taken us to Hawaii with George Clooney in The Descendants. And once again, talking about movies which refuse to apologize for how heartwarming it wants to be. We're talking about a father who has to finally actually become a father, because the movie starts out with literally the line, I'm the backup parent. He's never had to be the father, he's just the breadwinner. So now he has to deal with these two daughters he's having while also dealing with the trouble of letting his wife go, who is brain dead and on life support. The film is just intensely beautiful with things like that, with moments where we're having to see the emotional transition from one scene to another and watch George Clooney try to control himself as he goes from part to part. There are a couple roles in it which I felt at times were purposely invented just to push Clooney, like that of the friend of his elder daughter. I can't remember the dude's name, but like people were just being annoyed by him constantly. Like there's even one moment, I don't know if you guys have seen this film yet, have you?
No.
Sorry,
no?
What is this? I was in the same. Oh yeah, no, I haven't. I'd really love to. It's actually in the movies, in the theaters here, and I've been
finally.
Yeah, meaning to go, but I haven't watched it yet.
There's this one moment where they're driving back, and the dude says something that obviously no one in their right mind would say in that situation. And George Clooney has no other response other than to completely stop the car and ask him, do you fucking want to get hit right now?
Is that his child he's talking to?
No, it's the child's friend.
Sounds about right.
And it's just constant moments of that where you see him being pushed into giving the big emotional response, but always trying his best to control it so as to deal with this family issue in a proper way, especially with his children around. And I guess I particularly enjoy it because of this one line that opens the film. There's a little narration, and he's talking about the fact that, oh, I live in Hawaii, and all of my friends think because I live in Hawaii, I live in this wonderland, because they think of it as a tourist attraction. And all he has to say to that is, what do they think, that we're immune to life? Or something to that effect. And I just thought that was just a brilliant line for anyone to say like that. The Descendants, it's awesome.
That sounds great.
It does.
The Douglas.
That makes it my turn?
Yes.
Okay, thankfully Andrew hasn't stolen this from me. I think it's probably because he has it at a higher position.
Fuck you then.
My number six movie,
I'm not sure,
is I think one of the best revenge movies that has come out in the States this year.
The Man from Nowhere. No, that's
yeah, it's probably not like. Maybe when I say it's a revenge movie, some people might not agree with me, but I think that this is the epitome of a revenge film. But this
Taken
movie
wasn't
is,
Taken never come out last year.
This movie is The Ides of March.
Paul, tell me something I don't know. Tell me what's going to happen on the 15th.
Us by 9.
So you're certain you're going to win here?
Certain, no, confident, yeah.
You just said you win by 9.
And I think that we will. St. Gabriel can blow his horn on election day and get his four horsemen to rig the ballot boxes for Pullman, and it wouldn't surprise me.
Hmm. So you're saying there's a good chance you won't win?
Don't twist my words, Ida. What I'm saying is I'm not going to promise you we'll win. But he was decorated by Bush Sr. from the first Gulf War. He protested the second. He left his state with a balanced budget and the fourth highest education rate. The Republicans have no one out there that can touch this guy. So for this moment, this election, this primary is the presidential. And that, Ida, is the State of the Union.
Starring my favorite guy,
every movie this year, Gosling.
Gosling.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling.
And your boy, George Clooney.
George Clooney is in it, also Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yes.
And this movie, this is the best revenge movie, the best U.S. revenge movie this year, easily. And that is my number six.
I just want to let you know, Douglas, that that's not in my top 10.
It's not at all?
It's in the top 20, not in the top 10.
Wow, after the way that you put this...
Oh, it's a good thing we're not in the top 20.
Yes, it really is.
All right, so there is a foreign film being talked about everywhere. The Artist, that we haven't seen, and we won't get a chance to see that for about 6 months, I'd say, Douglas. We have no chance of seeing it.
6 months, more like 6 years.
There is a foreign film that is getting a lot of thought that I have seen. It's Separation. Now, usually when foreign films get any amount of recognition that we see, it's usually because it's very good. No one would promote shitty foreign films because it wouldn't make any sense. So every time, what was the Vampire? Let the Right One In.
Yeah.
And a couple of years ago, we also had. Why am I?
Wow, Andrew! Wait, I'm going to hijack this one more time. Mm-hmm. I am on page one of Google. My search is 2011 top, well, I made a mistake, but it says top one movies here, and I must say that the top 20 films of 2011 on G-Man Reviews is actually on page one.
That's wonderful. That's awesome.
Congrats.
It is because Google localizes our searches. They see that you're in Jamaica.
His server's not in Jamaica.
Yes,
my server's in
I'm sure you visited Andrew's site more than once. You are logged in as Douglas Robinson, and they are tailoring your results. So thank Google for being awesome.
Thank you, Google.
Right. Yes. Can I take back my pick now, or are you going to hijack it some more?
No, go ahead.
Thank you. So Separation is one of the big foreign films that's being pushed in the States this year, and it is fantastic. It's about, of course, the title, Separation. Two people are being separated, but there's a lot of other factors at play. And I don't want to talk too much about the movie because everyone really needs to watch it just to see the dynamic that these two go through, and not only them, but their children and others that are surrounding them, watching them go through this process. And you see how much of a process separating is. It's not just like when your boyfriend and girlfriend, you just go, you know what, you're a bitch, and then you turn to the other one and say, you're unfaithful or whatever, you scream at each other and you just walk away, and that's it, right? But it doesn't work like that once children are involved, and certain cultures treat separation different from ours, and just getting a glimpse, well, it's more than a glimpse, getting immersed into this situation, it felt so good, and it's so, the acting is so spectacular. That's the only real word that I can use. It is far and away some of the best acting that I've seen this year. It's better than any of the acting that I see in any other movies on my top 10. And I hope that you guys will get a chance to watch this movie soon. I really want to talk about it more in depth, but to give anything, to say much more about it would be giving it away. So Separation is my number 5.
Well, I've really been meaning to watch that movie for a while now. Hopefully I'll get to it soon. Is it my pick now?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
So my number 5 film of 2011, and part of me hopes I'm hijacking this from both of your lists, because I want to believe that the two of you love this movie as much as I do. And it is the movie by James Bobbin, written by Jason Segel, The Muppets. Starring Jason Segel, Amy Adams, and The Muppets. It is one of the most smile-inducing films of the year. And that's what I'll say about a lot of the movies that I have on the higher end of my list, because it's just brilliant. We saw Jason Segel do his thing in, what was that movie? Forgetting Sarah Marshall, where he did the vampire puppet musical. And he's taken that same energy and enthusiasm for puppetry and that kind of brand of comedy and brought it to a new Muppets film. And I don't remember where I heard this, but I heard apparently a story saying that even though the Muppets is owned by Disney, they're still like a bit of a separate entity, which is why they haven't been forced into making new films or new properties or anything to churn out content. And they haven't created anything because they haven't heard any good ideas. And apparently whenever people go to meet and present ideas and say, hey, I want to make a Muppet film where they jump up and down for 90 minutes and that's all, they literally at the meeting, you have all of these people, including the execs, come out and they all have puppets with them. And apparently Jason Segel went in and he just got the puppet, put it on his hand and started presenting with the puppet as opposed to just talking to them man to man, which just shows you exactly what Segel is and what he feels towards this film. An added plus is that most of the new songs that came in the film were written by Britt McKenzie of Flight of the Conchords. And if you go in thinking that and you hear the new songs, you will hear Flight of the Conchords, which is just brilliant in my mind. It's a shoo-in to win Best Song at the Oscars this year, and if it doesn't, it's a crime. I love the Muppets. Well, and added to that, we're talking about a movie which gave us oh crap, why can't I remember his name now? Chris Cooper gave us a scene with Chris Cooper doing a rap. That in itself is one of the funniest things of 2011.
Well, that sounds good. Unfortunately, I haven't even watched that movie yet. So,
wow. Really?
Yeah. I need to. I know I do, but
that's pretty bad, doesn't
it? It was not in my top 10 because of that, more than likely.
I don't think you would have made it into your top 10.
Yeah. All right. So my number 5, just kind of showing the sort of, well, one of two things. Either A, I have definitely not watched enough good movies this year, or B, this movie was really that good.
Or C, you're high on your own supply.
It could be that. But my number 5 is actually Mission Impossible Part 4.
No.
What?
What is the proper name of the movie, Douglas?
Ghost Protocol.
There's no fine. Okay.
Aren't we supposed to say Andrew Bird somewhere in the title? Just
yes.
Andrew Bird is the singer that I love. Brad Bird is who you. Yeah.
That doesn't make sense. Who the hell is that Andrew Bird?
So who the hell is that Brad Bird?
A great director. Andrew Bird is a made up name for made up people.
Anyway, yes, Brad Bird directed this movie, and what I think he did a lot to make it different from the last one. The third movie was definitely J.J. Abrams overhauling the franchise and saying, listen, here's how you do a great action movie. And it was great. But and Damon again is shaking his head. But,
I like how Damon is trying as hard as possible not to argue with any of us today.
I know, right?
I've only done it once.
But the way that Brad Bird took this movie and kept all the great action pieces of it, but also made it almost into a comedy where, you know, there were all sorts of crazy wrongnesses that were happening. You know, there's a scene where he has these gloves that work like suction cups, and he's walking up the building, and one of the gloves stops working, but then it starts working, and then it stops working. And then he throws it away, and then it comes back at him and shows him, like, oh, I could still work if you wanted me. No. And, you know, there are points where he does a crazy jump, and he's about to get there, and then he smacks his head against the window, you know.
I remember that. Actually, you know, it was one of my favorite moments in that movie. It had to do with the gloves bit. It was when they were just introducing it, and they were telling him, you have to go and do this. And I think it's the first time for the entire four films that you've ever seen Tom Cruise's character look at what he was about to do and have this moment where he was going, really?
That's a terrible idea, guys.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys got that as well.
It was in the film. He finally stopped being James Bond, and he's like, maybe we shouldn't do this.
This is a slight wrinkle, but nothing to worry about. We're just going to have to go into the server room from the outside.
What?
Well, the firewalls on this building server are military grade. I could hack it, but it would take too long.
There's hardware in.
And there's four layers of next-gen security between us and the server room. There's no way we can get to it from inside.
If we can't get to the server, we don't control the elevators, we don't control the security cameras. This operation's over before it even begins.
I'm telling you, we can get to it from outside.
We?
I'm on the computer.
And I'm just the helper.
What floor is it on?
130.
130? Bed ducts.
Pressure sensitive.
Not enough time.
Elevator shaft.
Infrared sensors.
Not enough time.
How am I supposed to do this?
Maybe there is another way. Can we go in and talk to somebody? I don't have... I'm not Batman, guys. This is not a thing that we do. But it was... That movie's fun.
That movie's fantastic.
It's so much fun.
So good. And...
Tilted X-Men's better.
Oh, of course X-Men is better. That was going to be my number four. But anyway, that is my number five. Damien, go.
All right, so your number five is MI4.
No, isn't it MIGP?
Yeah, MIGP.
I thought there was no
big
four
poop,
in
right.
The.
Your number is big poop. All right, so this is my one truly controversial pick. Just going to get it out of the way. I love Another Earth. Douglas doesn't like it. Andrew loathes it. I don't give a shit. Screw both of you guys. Absolutely 100% love this movie, and I've watched it again, and then I went back and I watched it again. I wanted to see if there was something there that I didn't see the first time. Maybe Douglas and Andrew are right, but you guys are not right. You might be right for yourselves. I think the mic always bad, but you're not right for Damien. this movie is. It's so good. I love the concept. I love the relationship that happens. I love how the relationship falls apart. I love the resolution of the movie. Everything about this movie, I enjoy. There are some leaps in logic. Even though I see them, I don't even care. It doesn't affect me in any way. Oh my goodness, I love this film. And I'm so looking forward to the next thing that she does. Her name, Britt Marling, I think her name is?
Yes, that's her name.
Right.
Oh my god. I don't remember bad actresses
fair
on
enough.
That movie.
I actually want to watch the other movie that she was in last year, which I haven't gotten to see. Was it called something about the sound or something?
There's another movie, but I can't find it anywhere. There's no DVDs. It's apparently still in. It's still on the indie circuit, so lurking around or something. But I definitely, I mean, if it is anywhere as good as Another Earth, I will be overjoyed to see the movie. I think everybody should watch it. There will be a significant portion of people who will not like this movie. But for every person that enjoys it the way I enjoy it, I think there's something really special about this movie. And so that is why I have it as number 4.
And my number 4 film of 2011 is a movie that I finished watching for the first time approximately 4 hours ago.
Okay. Due diligence.
And that was Martin Scorsese's latest film, Hugo.
Oh. I really want to watch that movie.
This movie makes me wish I had a child that I could take him to and make him watch it. Because
did you watch it in 3D?
Yes, I did. And it is possibly the best use of 3D in film I've ever seen.
Andrew, you do know that you can get a child, right? It doesn't have to be your child.
Are
some laws that you might have to break to get said child. But you still can get one. Just remember to return it.
Because it's not kidnapping if you return it, right?
Right. You just borrow a child. I've done that many times. I probably shouldn't say that on police or listen to the internet. Maybe I know, very ridiculous.
The movie is fantastic, and the truth about it is just like all the other movies in the upper half of my list, is because of its innocence and its forthrightness, and the truth of it is a pretty much 2-hour thesis of Scorsese saying, we need to document this history of cinema. We need to have people understand that something came before Star Wars. Something came before Hitchcock. Something came before I'm running out of names. John Ford, and he uses I guess technically is a spoiler for people who have just paid attention to the marketing. But if you're one of those people who are listening to podcasts and people talk about this film constantly, you would know by now that the film involves Georges Méliès. And if you don't know what that name is, I'm not going to explain it any further. I'm just going to leave it there. And what he did in cinema. It is a brilliant study of classic cinema and wonderful, how wonderful it is. The 3D, and I don't know if it's that I'm blanking out other films which haven't used this idea, but there are so many moments where Scorsese will focus on a character, and it's not that the character is going to jump out at us, but he just kind of leans in a little bit, and suddenly you can see the leaning in happen through the 3 dimensions, and along with it, in sync, you can hear the sound in your theater just shift back behind you, as if it's real, as if this is actually 3 dimensions happening. And I don't know if I've ever seen a 3D film do that before. Screw Avatar, screw How to Train Your Dragon.
Hey, no, we don't say those things.
Hugo is Hugo.
I'll have you take that back, son.
Hugo is the excuse. Hugo will be the reason why anyone will ever want to watch 3D ever again.
Gran Turismo is in 3D.
I'm talking about movies. Movies.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, well.
Uncharted 3 is in 3D. I'm sorry.
Shut up. Alright, so let's keep talking. We're looking at the number 4 spot. Now, I just want to let everybody know that we have officially hit kind of like a breaking point in my top 10 list. Before, I was, you know, open to changes.
Yeah, we're nearly.
Yeah. But right now, yeah, hard and fast. All four of these movies, except arguably one, are
already breaking his own rules.
I'm not breaking my own rules.
Breaking
I'm just
his
that
own
rules
about
breaking
rules.
I'm not arguing. Are fantastic, like, and there's no way that this order, nothing can change.
These are the four, except maybe one.
Shut up. And tonight, I'm happy to say, is Ryan Gosling's night. Ryan Gosling hits again, this time with Steve Carell in Crazy Stupid Love, which was one of my favorite comedies this year.
I've watched you pick up women doesn't mean that I know how to pick up women.
You ever see Karate Kid?
What does that have to do with anything?
You know when he's teaching them to wax on and off, but he's really teaching them to fight?
You want me to fight someone?
What's the first thing I do when I go up to a girl? I buy her a drink.
Yes, always. Without fail, you buy her a drink, even if she doesn't want one, you insist.
And do I talk about myself?
Never. Never talk about yourself, always about her.
Because bar banter
is boring,
it's the
so
worst.
You put the impetus on her. She has to be the interesting one. Impress me. Impress me with how interesting you are. It's a big game. Game. Creepy, creepy little game.
Oh,
you
that's
play.
Judgmental, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the night, what do? Do I ask them to come home with me?
No, you tell them to come home with you. They have no choice in the matter. It is your choice, and they are so overjoyed to have had the opportunity to make sweet, sweet love to you. Oh my God. You did. You Miyagi'd me.
Huh.
CSA.
Kevin Bacon's cameo / role, whatever you want to call it.
I thought his name was Jorge.
Apologies, Jorge.
The Bacon.
I like that. I prefer that one. The Bacon's little piece in this film was classic. There is nothing about this movie that I don't want to rewatch 100 times. And
I'm sorry, are you Steve Jobs? Then why are you wearing sneakers? So I guess it's my turn. And another Ryan Gosling movie is about to come up. It is Drive. Now everyone has talked to death about Drive, so I'll not go much further. Except to say that the soundtrack is amazing. And this movie is likewise. I remember when we saw the trailer, we all said, this is going to be awesome. We all saw the trailer, wait. There's something about this trailer, right? Refn had some misfires before, and I'm the only one that saw the Push-Out trilogy, so I'm like, guys, this guy's great. Right? But not even I was really ready for what he put on film. And everyone has seen it now, and everybody is flipping out, except, of course, haters, because the internet has very few rules.
What are we talking about, Damien? Damien?
One of those rules
are
is
we
that
talking, I mean,
people must hate.
It wasn't the Fast and the Furious. How can I like a movie that isn't Fast and the Furious?
People must hate. And I love the internet for them. No matter how, there's people who don't like Adele. I don't know what is wrong with these people. And there's people that don't like Drive. I have no idea what is wrong with these people. It's like saying, you know, I don't like sugar and happiness. I don't understand. But Drive. Drive is my number 3. And I have a feeling we'll be hearing some more about this movie. A small feeling.
Small.
And Andrew, how good your numbers?
My number 3 is a film which, again, we have talked to death about. and it is the film Senna. Yep. I should preface this by saying my number 3, 2, and 1, in my mind, while being completely different movies, are equal.
I will not agree with that statement at all, but sure.
They are all the best theater.
One is number 1 and 1 is number 3.
One is good, one is gooder.
No, you can interchange them, is what I'm really saying. You can interchange them on any given day, and I'll be happy with it. But they are just so different that I, whatever, you know, I'm gonna forget that. You know, you guys are just going to mock it. Senna, right. Number 3, fantastic documentary. I don't care about Formula One racing. I don't care about cars. I didn't know who Ayrton Senna was before the trailer came out.
You just said two things that I had an adverse physical reaction to. Right, you say it so nonchalant, like it's something that normal people say. I don't like cars or Formula One, right, or happiness.
Who likes happiness?
Or women. I don't like any of these things. Oh my god.
Yeah, I didn't walk into this movie with any of the bias that most of the people who would have wanted to see this story would have walked into this movie with. And I left the movie with so much joy and wonder and just jaw-dropping amazement at this man and his life. I continue to wonder how it wasn't eligible for the Academy for Best Documentary, and that this movie
beat everybody at everything, and they cannot have that.
And this movie is good enough that it should really be in the Best Picture category.
What movie is that about?
Senna.
Senna? Okay.
Yeah. Which I'm sure Douglas hasn't watched.
I don't watch it. It's on Netflix. I'll watch it there. So, okay, number three. I spoke earlier about the best U.S. revenge movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going across the waters a little bit.
Yes, I like this. That sounds great.
Finally, I've caught a movie that is out. Actually, funny thing, I think this is the only movie in my top 10 this year that is not out of the States. And this movie is I Saw the Devil. A Korean film. I should just call it a revenge film.
Yeah,
you know it's Korean.
Yeah, it's all Korean.
Because really the two words are interchangeable. Korean revenge, same thing. This movie, I remember seeing the trailer and I never quite knew what it was. I mean,
but
you said
we're all excited.
Yeah, we're all excited.
Except probably Andrew.
Probably.
Yeah.
And then I forced everybody to watch it because it had come out and nobody wanted to watch it. And I was like, Guys, come on. We're going to watch it.
Your version of history is burned.
And it blew us all away. Even those of us who had high expectations.
I'm pretty sure I suggested that.
No. This was my movie.
Sure?
And no, I'm pretty sure. You know how? What was even? I remember. So first off, before we even watched the movie.
Oh, the poster, right.
The trailer. No, it wasn't even the poster. The trailer came out, and it was while I was, like, heading up the whole trailer section on Google Wave. Rest in peace. And I had to lobby hard. I mean, this was one of the very few ones where I actually got you guys to watch a foreign trailer. And then it was actually my pick.
Then Douglas, thank you.
This movie is, I mean, I don't know why I don't own it yet.
Did you just say? Douglas,
it's fantastic. It's one of the best movies.
It's sold on Amazon. I don't understand.
Oh, my goodness.
Any of
the things. It's on Netflix and you can click play anytime you want.
I'd rather shot than not have that
Listen, this movie, as with all Korean movies, starts with somebody dying. Some policeman's wife/fiance dies. He takes revenge. That's the movie, and that's all you need to know because everything else is just
awesome. To even describe. So good, unbelievable.
So if you haven't watched it, please do and enjoy.
Now, I will say that the reason I saw The Devil is not on my list because, unlike Douglas, I'm not a dirty cheater. The movie came out in 2010.
No, wait, stop. According to the United States.
No. According to IMDb, which is my movie overlord. Okay. So IMDb is the one that I use.
We have this argument every year.
Yeah.
You realize this, right?
And Douglas cheats every year, which is fine. But it is the reason that it is not on my... It is my 2010-2011
yes.
movie of the year. Hands down, nothing terrible. Now to my number two. Lars von Trier.
I was wondering when this was coming.
A good friend of mine. And I am now 100% biased towards pretty much anything he puts out. I love Melancholia.
The earth is evil. We don't need to grieve for it. What? Nobody will miss it. But where would Leo grow up? All I know is life on Earth is evil. There may be life somewhere else, but there isn't. How do you know? Because I know things. Oh, yes, you always imagined you did.
A lot. More than Antichrist, love, Melancholia.
Whoa there, friend.
I love Melancholia.
Melancholia, the two movies
it
that
is
could have been
so
good.
Good. So, I mean, I don't know how he came up with this concept. But it is so good, right? The just proposition of what should be, you know, a life-ending situation with an actual life-ending situation and how she reacts. I mean, I don't even like Kirsten Dunst. I'll come out and say it. Not a fan at all. And she crushed it in this movie. Everything about this movie is perfect. 100%. I wouldn't change a sound, a clip, a shot. There's nothing about this movie that I do not like.
You know what I find interesting about that film, right? I was listening to an interview with Lars von Trier before he decided to say no more. He's not doing any more interviews at all. And he was talking about how he writes his films. And I'll say this, the only films of his I've seen to date is still only Antichrist and Melancholia. I just can't push myself to watch anymore, even though I want to. And he was talking about the fact that generally whenever he writes his films, he'll write the screenplays, and then when he's done and he's finished and he's good with it, he immediately takes all of the major roles and switches agendas, which is why the films that we know him for right now, Antichrist and Melancholia, we always have the female being the real protagonist, the real ballsy, in your face, getting shit done, or being the role that we watch out for in the movie. And it's kind of like that in Melancholia, where you see Kiefer Sutherland being pretty much a pussy for the entire film. I don't know if you guys were interested or cared about that factoid, but I said it.
In no way, shape, or form. That has changed nothing. I don't care how he does, what he does. Not really an issue.
He's just doing it right. Right?
I've heard some of the madness that he says about his movies. It is clear to me that Lars von Trier is a crazy person. And that is clear to pretty much everybody else at this point. It doesn't change the fact that I love the last two movies he made. Dancer in the Dark was terrific. It is depressing as shit. people really shouldn't watch that movie if they're sad or even think they're going to be sad in the next 2 hours. You shouldn't watch that movie. But he has a way with his movies, and I couldn't believe that he was able to pull off a movie like that. I've never seen anything like that before. It is so good. And I mean, I love movies about the apocalypse, but there's never been one done like this before. It is so good, so engaging. Everything about this movie, I don't even know how to describe it. There's just something that has attached itself to me with this movie. And it is mind-boggling to me that this movie is not my number one. Crazy talk that this movie is number one. For this not to be number one, there has to be some movie that is beyond awesome.
I wonder what that movie is.
About 5 or so minutes. So, Andrew, how goes your number two?
My number two film of the year is one that we've continually talked to death, and I'm sure we'll hear about in a little bit some more. So I'm just going to leave it at, it's Nicholas Winding Refn's Drive, and every film from now on should have pink captions for its opening credits.
No, they shouldn't.
Okay, so as you said, Andrew, Ryan Gosling is really winning, and he won again here.
He's
number
Charlie
two.
Sheen.
He's Charlie Sheen. Number two is Drive, directed by Nicholas.
Did Shannon ever tell you how we met? I used to produce movies in the 80s. Kind of like action films, sexy stuff. One critic called them European. I thought they were shit. Anyway, he arranged all the cars for me, did all the stunts. I liked him. I liked having him around. Even though he overcharged the shit out of me. His next business venture, he got involved with some of Nino's friends. They didn't go for the overcharging bit. They broke his pelvis. He's never had a lot of luck.
I broke no good.
This movie is so good. You can just kind of copy and paste what I said when we talked about this way back when. I love the violence in this film, the grittiness of this movie. I love the way that these pauses.
He made a 2012 80s movie. How did he do that?
He really did.
How is that possible? It felt like an 80s movie.
But Damien...
And it felt like a modern movie all at the same time.
But not only that, Damien, how do you make a movie where about a half of the time, nothing is happening, and your characters are on screen, just in one position, kind of paused in some sort of melodramatic pose, and yet it's still fantastic.
But Douglas, critics will tell you that is the flaw of the movie. That nothing happens in this movie.
I find really interesting, talking about that idea in the film about, you know, there not being anything happening really with our characters in scenes as we go along. Well, it's been well documented, Refn shot the film chronologically, so that whenever he came into a scene, he said that he would come in with the script, he'd look at Ryan and say, Ryan, forget your lines, just go. And they'd do it, and then he could add and minus as he went along. And earlier this year, I sat down and I watched for the first time The Thin Red Line. Thank you, Douglas. And there was an interview on there.
Pause for a second. How has he gotten to this point? So many, like, large holes in his movie. What? Douglas, you're here. You guys are in the same house.
The reason he thanked me is because I gave it to him. No, so I forced
Douglas,
him to watch it.
Douglas, I'm not going to thank you, right? Shame on you, Douglas.
For making it last as long.
What, 26? How did he get to this point? You just came in here and watched movies by yourself? Right? And you have this younger brother that is so... You're a terrible brother, Douglas. Terrible brother.
Anyways, on to what I was saying, right? There were... I ended up watching a lot of the bonus features on the Criterion release of that, and they were talking about Malick's methodology with filmmaking, in that they will make sure that he has a lot of time to do his films, because what he loves to do is he loves to take a screenplay and take a scene and shoot the scene as written, and then right after redo the scene with absolutely no dialogue spoken, just action. And you notice it in a lot of his films where they'll intercut a lot between there being no action and narration to you actually seeing characters having dialogue. And I feel like Refn found a way to make that procedure a lot more accessible via having a character with enough, I don't even know the word, gravitas feels just a bit too much to say, screen presence, that we didn't even need a narration. We just knew as we were going along that this was one badass motherfucker and he was going to be great.
And drive. I don't run things down. I won't sit in while you get it. I drive. We got 5 minutes and he was driving.
So the question I have to ask you, Damon, is what
is better than
inspired you?
Senna and Drive?
Yeah. No, not Drive. Melancholia for you, because I know how much you rate Melancholia.
What
could have beaten Melancholia for you?
Alright. So there was a perfect movie that came out this year, and it was Melancholia. But somehow a director found a way to make something beyond perfect. And he hasn't done much in a long while. I'm kidding me. Absolutely not.
I enjoy that, even though I'm supposed to be the Malick apologist on the podcast, I laughed at that as well.
So you guys, not Douglas, but Andrew, has Senna on the list. And he has it as his number 3. Which is fine, because he already explained to everybody listening that he's not really a man. Doesn't like cars and car racing and some other things that I won't go into. But Senna is the only movie that I cried at this year. It is the only movie that I've cried at in a great many years. And it is one of the few movies that I've left on loop for essentially days that I know.
That day, I suddenly realized that I was no longer driving it conscious. And I was in a different dimension for me. The circuit for me was a tunnel, which I was just going. And I realized I was well beyond my conscious understanding.
I cannot believe that they made anything near that good. Now, part of it is because I am unbelievably biased towards the subject matter. But that cannot be it alone, because I've watched many documentaries about subjects that I have a lot of interest in. The Tyson documentary didn't do this. The Muhammad Ali documentary. I've seen so many documentaries that I've enjoyed thoroughly. Last year, Restrepo, could not believe that there was a documentary that good. But Senna, there's something there, and it goes beyond just the filmmaking. It is they've somehow infused the essence of the man in the movie, and it is spectacular that they were able to do it through interviews and footage. Movies don't do this, not to me. I don't have this kind of reaction to many things, and the fact that Senna was able to draw out emotions out of me that I didn't know movies or anything was going to be able to do. I mean, Senna is the thing that changed my outlook about movies for this entire year. I had written off 2012 by and large. Another Transformers movies, 900 comic book movies. I just essentially given up. I'm like, all right, yeah, there'll be a few good movies towards the end of the year, but it's looking very bleak for 2011. Senna changed all of that. I started looking forward to going to the movies again. I just cannot believe how much attachment I have to this movie. It is so good. I mean, even people like Andrew and others who have no relationship to the subject matter at all enjoyed this documentary. And it's fantastic. It is terrific. All the superlatives that you can find. It is unbelievable. That is the word that I keep coming back to. I cannot, honestly, every time I watch it, I cannot believe just how good and just how much of a reaction this movie gets out of me. I mean, after I saw it, I told you guys that some miracle would have needed to happen this year to get anything close to Senna. Nothing did. Nothing came close. There's not many movies that I've seen at any point that come close to this movie. I mean, the only other movie that I'd put up against Senna at this point in terms of movies that I will love till the day I am dead is Ikiru. It is this movie and a Kurosawa movie, which is ridiculous to say at this point. I love this movie. I wish that there is some way I could get more of this movie. That's how much I love it. And so that is my number one.
Apparently there's a long cut.
I have
there's an hour and a half and a, like a two
and more. There's a 3-hour one. That's the one that comes on the Blu-ray. That's the one that I have. It's ridiculous.
You got the import. You got the import, Damien.
Yeah, there are scratches in the Blu-ray already. That is how many times. It has sat inside the PS3 for longer than most games. It's ridiculous. And so that is my number one. Nothing came close. And nothing will come close. Not for now. Chris Nolan, you have your work cut out for you. You're the person that I'm looking for. Like, Batman 3 has to be spectacular. I don't think you're getting close to Senna. So I think you've been usurped.
My number one film of 2011 is one that when I first heard of and when I first saw the trailer, I refused to believe could ever be a contender for top film of 2011. I couldn't fathom it, you know? But it fits perfectly into what I categorize 2011 as film being, and as I've already said before, the year without cynicism. And it's Steven Spielberg's sentimental war film, War Horse. It is...
I was wondering.
Once I saw Drive at number 2, I kind of figured...
I've actually talked to him about this movie. And, let me see if he says it. Keep going, Andrew.
No, say what you're going to say. I want to hear it.
I want to hear what you have to say.
The true nature of the film is looking at the life of Joey from when he was born to going into the Great War. But at the same time, it focuses a lot on his relationship with Albert, who is the young adult who ends up training Joey and raising Joey up until the point where the war actually occurs and they have to sell the horse. And the film is literally moment after moment of sentimental music rising, and we are now at a point where something has to happen. It's do or die every moment. The first time is when the horse comes in, and this horse, which has never worked a day in his life, has to plow a field.
30 guineas? It's not worth 10. Are you out of your mind? What about the rent?
Strong one, Rosie. Look at the way he holds his head.
How the hell are we going to pull anything with that? Ted, you have to take him back. You have to take him back right now. You have to get down on your knees and beg for our money back.
No. No, please, don't take him back.
Can't take him back until he's broken in.
And how are you going to train a horse with that leg?
I'll train him.
Oh, you stay out of this, Albie. You don't know nothing about horses.
Please, Mum. Please let me. I can do it.
You have to keep him. No choice.
Right. Well, you got one.
And we are literally going plow through the field, and the music is up. We have actors, including James... Oh, shit, I almost said the wrong name. Eddie Marsden. Rufus Sewell. We have... the guy who plays Sherlock, Cumberbatch, I can't remember his first name. Tom Hiddleston. We have the dude who was the crazy ass
Godfather.
Yes, I watched the first season of Sherlock.
That's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, I have my issues, but I don't want to go into that now. The crazy Godfather from Un Profit is in this movie.
Have you seen the there's a second season that just finished?
I haven't watched the second series yet. War Horse, it's most brilliant when you break it down scene by scene, and many people would have issues with it, but honestly, just like how Damon was talking about Senna, the movie had me at tears. And when a movie can draw emotion from you to that level, it has won. It's beaten you. Sometimes it's a game we play. You go to the movie trying as hard as possible to find fault, but it breaks you down and you want to love it. And what it does best, the number one thing that I love about War Horse and what it does best, is it gives you a feel of old Hollywood again. There was an era of movies, you especially see it in films like The Searchers, where it still looked fake, but at the same time we accepted it being fake. You looked at a screen of John Wayne standing up in front of you, and you could see that he was standing in front of a wallpaper wall with orange lighting on it, and the movie gives you that in spades, and it is gorgeous to watch. I don't know if you guys have seen this movie yet. And
oh yeah, Kerb is really on point.
No, Kerb actually has also, I think.
But
you know,
guys,
I think so.
I don't know, you're wrong, sir. No way.
Guys,
I'm pretty sure.
I will give this movie an honest chance, because it is worth it.
I might watch it. I mean,
you just said War Horse is better than Senna.
I'll probably
and if
watch
you were
it
here, I'd punch you in the face. But since you're not, I'm going to give this movie a chance.
So, we have reached number one.
Yes.
In, I believe it was late September, possibly early October, I made a call. I made a prediction that a certain movie would be my number one movie for the year. And that prediction has come true.
Right, but we told you that Thor is not an acceptable choice.
I hate that movie.
Douglas Chipmunks is not...
Without much ado, the number one film for 2011, as per Douglas Robinson's list, is Warrior, starring none other than Tom Hardy. And that's all you need to know. Tom Hardy is in.
Keep your hands up.
Fenroy, give me some ice. You call that Puerto Rican kid. If he's here in 20 minutes, he gets $200.
Well, I'll fight him.
Do me a favor, guy. Go back to your bag. We don't need anybody else getting hurt. Take a walk.
All I'm saying is I'm happy to keep your boy warm for you.
You ever fought before? You get tuned up in here. It's on you, thing.
Sure, no problem.
Let's go. Oh, hey, watch that team.
Wanna be a hero? All right.
Oh, come on, easy.
Let's go.
Don't give him your back. Don't give him. Cover up, damn it.
Edgerton is really good.
Yeah, Joel Edgerton is really good as well. So is, and this is very surprising, Nick Nolte, who plays their father.
He's terrific.
He is terrific.
Douglas, I enjoy Warrior, right? A whole lot. My issue with Warrior and the reason it is not on my top 10, I mean, it is honorable mention all up and down. The performances are great. That we've seen that story so many times. No, not like once or twice. Like every year.
But you see, the thing is, yes, but you can execution never. You know what, though? You know, execution
I have
is
Jane Eyre on my list. They've made this exact movie yeah. many times. So I really don't have a leg to stand on.
I was about to say, because any movie that you want to look on anybody's top 10 list, or any movie that's ever been made, has already been made. But it's all about execution. It's all about how you do it. And what I thought was probably the greatest feature of this film was that, let's call it the melancholia effect, right? So melancholia, in essence, was two movies. It was split in two. Warrior actually did something very similar. Warrior had two very separate styles of movie and very separate stories all in the same movie. The first half of this movie was really the drama side to it. You know what you did to me when I was a young boy, right? Kind of thing, and oh, I ran away to get away from all of this kind of stuff. And that movie was a great movie. Then it switched gears. And it switched gears to the I am now a sports movie where I'll just show you a bunch of fighting and it will look awesome. And maybe I'll give you a couple of underdogs to root for. Awesome. And that movie was great. But what it did even better than each of these separate, really good movies, which Melancholia did not do, was that the switch of gear, that change from one movie to the other, and the linking of both of those movies, and the making it into one spectacular film was, I think, pitch perfect. And that, along with everything else, along with the enjoyability, along with the great acting, along with the great stories, was really why this, for me, was number one. I mean, I went in expecting, it's going to be an okay action movie. And it blew me out of my chair, out of my socks. It just threw me.
I think my issue with that movie is that it ended too sweet. I think that's really my major issue with the movie, right? Because they had such a hard line and such a hard edge to everything. Right up until the end, right? That is, I know it is based on true events, based is in giant quotations. I didn't really do any research. I don't know if that is how.
Damien. And 30 minutes or less is based on true events.
True mediocre events? There's something. Douglas, don't get me wrong. It's not like an Andrew pick where I'm going actively trying to dislike the movie. Tom Hardy is in this movie. Right? I wanted to love this movie, especially after all the praise he gave it. I went in, I'm like, yeah, and for a long time, that movie, I was on board. But there's something extra. I don't know what it was that I expected get out of the movie. I just didn't get it. And last year with The Fighter, I mean, I loved The Fighter, and it told the same kind of story, with these guys, and they need to fight, and so, and it has a happy ending ish, and you know, but I don't know what it is that connected me with the fighter that I'm not getting the same, because to have a Tom Hardy movie come out and it not being my top 10 is not something that I've said ever. I mean, when we saw Bronson, we all collectively went, so this guy's awesome. And everything else that we've seen him in, we go, oh, so this guy's awesome.
Speaking of everything else that we've seen him in, you watched that the show TV that he show? Was in, right? You know what's kind of getting me upset? Is, what's the name of it? Can you remember?
I'm too, so tired.
It's the Take. Right, the Take is the name of it. What's kind of gotten into my gullet a little bit, and this is a complete, like, total side story, is I was watching Stars the other day, and Stars has it, but not only does Stars have it, Stars is pitching it as their original.
Douglas, haven't I shown you time and time again Stars has been doing that for years, though?
Stars original.
But Andrew, this show, it's not even like you can look at the show and say to yourself, oh, this looks like it was made today. No, the show, I mean, yes, it looks like a recent show, but just look at Tom Hardy in that show and look at Tom Hardy today. This show was made, I think, like 10 years ago.
Didn't you watch Tron 2? Didn't you watch Tron 2? Jeff Bridges looked like he was 20 in that film.
Stars original has perfected the time machine. Where they're able to go into the past, pull past Tom Hardy in it, while present Tom Hardy shooting Batman, and get him to do this TV series, Douglas. Didn't you see the article he was on Engadget?
That's right, yeah.
What do you think that was about?
I thought I said that there was some sort of
just wait till we see Luthor as a style of original. Yes. Give it some time.
But that won't happen for another 10 years at least.
All I'm going to say, Ree Douglas's number one, is I ditto everything you said, Damian. I actually recently revisited The Fighter, and I agree. The Fighter, while doing the same exact story, manages to be like 100 times more.
Such a mediocre movie.
You see now that Andrew is agreeing with me.
Yes, Christian Bale was fantastic. But that's the only part of that movie that was great. Everything else was mediocre to poor. Poor being Mark Wahlberg. I mean,
I don't like Andrew agreeing with me. I really don't like
him. Generally,
that's why like I'm here to nominate movies like War Horse and We Bought a Zoo.
You can't go mean tagging with you, Andrew. Top that 12, I'm a better man. So I'll just go ahead and say that my pick is clearly G-Man Reviews' pick of 2011. It is... Right, we all have our individual pick, but as a website and as a podcast.
I think Drive is the number one.
I think Drive has to be the number one. I think Drive is...
No, this is not a discussion. No. I don't know what you guys are arguing with me about. So, congratulations to Steno for being...
No, hold on. Damian is writing off the number one picks.
Right.
And so, your number one pick is War Horse, Andrew. And for mine, he put War. I don't want him to have any sort of, like, confusion as to whether I actually said War Horse or Warrior. So I've just made sure. It's
can War. I put Warrior Horse? So, congratulations, Senna, and the people behind that film. Your G-Man Reviews 2011 Film of the Year. And congratulations for the 30 or so other movies that tried and failed miserably. Warrior.
Any honorable mentions before we go, Douglas?
I have a few. Meek's Cut Off, definitely, which
I put on mine.
Damien put on his list. The Beaver, I think, was a really
fuck no.
really, really decent movie for last year.
Transformers 3.
Transformers 3 actually a Canada movie. I don't know if you really deserves an honorable mention,
so
but that was kind of funny.
It is so bad.
X-Men, which was in my top 10 list, but got stolen.
By what? But who? Oh, right, I stole it.
Yeah, you stole it. X-Men, The Last Man Standing, or whatever it was called.
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. We're going to need to watch that. I don't want to have to force you guys to watch it.
No, you don't have to force me. I've started already. It's in train. I think Sherlock Holmes definitely is a bit of an honorable mention.
Are you serious?
I love that movie. I don't have very many others though.
Alright, so Moneyball, enough with your nonsense. Moneyball, definitely none of us spoke about that, which is
that's definitely in my honorable mentions.
I never watched that one.
Horrible Bosses was
Horrible
fantastic.
Bosses, I love that movie.
Tinker Tailor, I said that before. And Margin Call, it's the movie about a fictional stock market being destroyed, and it was really good. Jeremy Irons put in a performance that was pitch perfect. And I've seen CNN and some other places quoting lines from the movie, which
is
kind of sad. But yeah, this year was a pretty decent year. People already brought up Midnight in Paris.
You know, a movie could have been in my
Win-win
top 10.
Win-Win is another one.
Yeah, Win-Win is in my honorable mentions. One that none of you guys mentioned. 13 Assassins.
Orgy. 13 Assassins.
13 Assassins
is not a good movie. Andrew Robinson.
It is a fantastic movie.
Andrew, we love the movie. I'm not going to deny that. But to say that it is a good movie might be taking it a little bit too far. That movie doesn't even approach anything close to subtlety, right? And there's a comic relief character embedded in the movie, Andrew Robinson.
And
no, we love it.
Comic relief.
We do love it. But
I think one movie I'd definitely like to mention, it's a weird movie because it's not because it should have been in my top 10, but more like it had potential to be a contender if it weren't for a couple of things, was Happy Thank You More Please. I think that movie was pretty decent. I think
is that the same movie I saw?
Yeah, it is.
I don't think it is because you just said it's an honorable mention.
No, it's I think it
the Malik Ackerman movie.
Yeah, yeah, she's
bald.
Yeah man, that's the one.
And
that movie had some great it had some great things. I think it was just a little bit, you know, all over the place.
Yeah.
But especially because that's a first try, that's the How I Met Your Mother guy's directorial debut.
I think
that's worth a mention.
I think I'm going to use the word that you patented today. You're in the wrongingness.
No, I said wrongnesses.
Wrongnesses, right. This is part of the wrongnesses.
I just want to also add two other films into the honorable mentions. You guys have said a lot of mine. Super.
You're wrong.
I don't know about that one.
And
really
a movie that one. According to you guys, I'm wrong again. Hesho.
No, that movie is bad.
You're wrong on both accounts. That's in wrongnesses.
Yeah,
and yes, 50-50 should be an honorable mention.
Yes,
I enjoyed it.
It should be an honorable mention. I did enjoy that a whole lot. Turns out you can make a movie about cancer funny. The ending was kind of predictable. In fact, a lot of that movie was kind of predictable. But it was still fun.
You know what's weird? Knowing that that movie was written by I can't remember
someone,
the guy's name. The guy who's actually had cancer. I don't think anyone's ever said as to whether he himself was cured or not.
Okay.
In real life, and I kind of want to know.
I don't know. They do say, though, that you generally never really do get cured of cancer.
Right.
Well, yeah, you know what I mean.
I'd also like to nominate Game of Thrones.
okay, alright, well, if we're going into that now, yeah man, Game of Thrones just
Luther, I don't care when it came out.
And on that note, people,
then
we're going to say goodnight, because they're just going to keep mentioning TV shows and random things that don't count.
You know what TV show I've been watching a lot of?
Thank you all for
is the IT Road. Have you ever watched that show? That show is...
Are you just discovering that show, Douglas?
No, I haven't just discovered it. I only just started watching it. I think I watched one episode once, like, 4 years ago, must have been when it actually started. And I was like, eh. But then I watched it again with Netflix, and it just... Oh, I started watching Archer Andrew. I kind of have to go back on my first impression. That show is awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Some of the episodes in season 2 aren't as strong.
Have you guys caught up with what's current now?
I'm not in season one.
Wait until you watch the 3-episode mini arc that they did right before they started season 3. It is quite hilarious. Anyways, that's it for tonight.
1 o'clock for you, and it's all right. 10 minutes to 12 for me. Douglas needs to drop half a back. Yes, for my yard. It's nice to be doing the podcast again. Cool on. Like talking to about movies, real people. I hate going on the internet and reading comments.
So thanks for listening, guys. That good night. Day will see a day, a brighter day, when all